When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello everyone and welcome to another re-release of our TSFP Presents series Cult Heroes. This week we're talking about two players with two big legacies at two Madrid-based clubs. One player's name is sung in the seventh minute of every game at the Bernabeu and the other player's name adorns the magnificent Estadio de Vallecas. Both are known just by their first names. We're talking this week about Juanito and Willy. Hello, patrons. Welcome to TSFP Presents Cult Heroes. It's the second episode of the season, and we're talking about two players today who are defined by their first names, and not even their first names, sort of nicknames derived from their first names. Two players from two clubs in the same city, two very different men, two very different clubs, but two intriguing characters. We're talking about Juanito and Willy. Juanito being Juan Gomez, the Real Madrid legend, and Willy being Wilfred Agbonavare, the Rayo Vallecano legendary goalkeeper. We'll start off by talking about Juanito, who I think most people listening might have an idea of who he is. They might never have watched him play. They might never really know what position he was, but you've heard the name Juanito, or you might have done. I hadn't before really moving to Spain. I don't know about you, Al.
I was just going to say, the only thing I knew about him really before doing the research for recording this podcast was the name, the fact that his name is still sung every single game in the seventh minute at the Bernabeu, and that he was a really good player in the 80s. But I didn't know much else. And I have to say, when you start reading up, I mean, we're doing, you know, half a podcast on him here.
Yeah.
You could do a whole podcast series on Juanito anecdotes. Yeah. There is so much, so many things happened in this guy's life and career, even though it was, of course, tragically cut short.
Yeah, and that's one of the other things, of course, that links these two players is both of them died young. That, I think, probably reinforces the myth a little bit, reinforces the legend that the fact they both went far too soon. Willy had cancer and Juanito was in a car crash, as indeed, of course, very famously was one of his teammates, Laurie Cunningham. And also, a bit like we were talking about with Maxi González in the last programme, these are guys who probably in part are important because they seem to kind of define their clubs.
Yes, very much so. I think certainly Juanito and the very famous spirit of Juanito has come to kind of symbolise what Real Madrid is about. And I remember speaking on another podcast about what is Real Madrid's identity, or what is Real Madrid's, what is their identity? I think their identity is this sort of epic comeback, fighting until the end, we never give up, all this. And that symbolised by Juanito and his spirit.
Well, and incarnated in a phrase.
I mean,
that's the fundamental thing here, that this starts with a game against Inter Milan in which Real Madrid had been beaten in the first game, and Juanito is coming off the pitch and he says, in what he takes to be Italian, which very much like our Italian is really just Spanish with an Italian accent, he says, look out, because 90 minutes in el Bernabeu son molto longo, is very, very long, because he was saying, you know, we will have time to bring this back. And they did, and this kind of was the forging of this whole legend. It actually starts with Derby County in 76, I think it is. This is the forging of that idea that Real Madrid will come back. I must say at this point, even though we're doing a podcast about Juanito, and even though we're talking about his spirit and about how that's seen as the embodiment of Real Madrid, I think in the last 7 or 8 years, too much has been made of it. I think it's been taken to a point that has become actually embarrassing for his family himself, so much so that members of his family pretty much said, look, please leave him alone.
They did a seance.
Well, that's it. I mean, for those who don't know, Ass did a Ouija board seance calling on the spirit of Juanito to help us. And every time Real Madrid needed a second leg comeback, they would say, the spirit of Juanito. And actually, over the last decade, the spirit of Juanito has failed every time. But that team did it again and again.
Hmm. In terms of what he was like as a player, we'll get to what he was like maybe as a person, because there are quite a few off the field antics. In terms of what he was like as a player, I mean, he was a good player. Do you think, but he's not a legend because of the player that he
was? Only he's extraordinarily successful.
I mean, here are some stats, okay. Some Juanito stats. He was 10 years a Real Madrid player. He played 401 official games, 121 goals, 34 Spain caps, went to two World Cups with Spain. He was Pichichi in La Liga in 1984, won five league titles, two Copas del Rey, two UEFA Cups. I mean, that's pretty good.
Yes, but yeah. That is not enough to get the kind of status that he has. You touched upon it before, Al. Every single game at the Bernabeu, in the seventh minute, there is this chant and it goes up and it sounds a bit like this. Illa, 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 Juanito Maravilla! Illa, 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 Juanito Maravilla! Illa, illa, illa. That is them singing Ia, 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 Juanito Maravilla, and it begins a chant every single game. For someone who is not their top scorer in the history, he hasn't got the most number of caps, appearances. I mean, he was a good player, very good player, but he wasn't the best player. A lot of good players have been at Real Madrid. But so why has he become this legend?
At the risk of sounding very blunt, as we mentioned earlier, in part because he dies young. Because as well, the circumstances of his death are that he's the coach of Mérida at the time. He brings a load of his team to Madrid to watch Real Madrid play against Torino in European competition as a reward to those players for playing well, and as a, if you like, a symbol of the fact that his connection to Real Madrid ran deep. So he dies coming to watch Real Madrid effectively as a fan. That reinforces that. But fundamentally, it's about that personality. And this is someone who, frankly, was a little bit nuts at times, was incredibly committed, would completely lose his head at times, and we'll come on to some of these stories in a minute, that was fantastically skillful. You watch some of the videos of it, it's genuinely hugely impressive, running at people, going beyond them. He was a winger that scored a lot of goals because he could cut inside. He could also provide a huge amount of crosses, in particular for Santillana, who was brilliant in the air, and they became very, very close. But it was about that sort of touch of madness. And it was also about the way that he said things. You know, this is a guy that said, had I not been a player, I'd have been an ultra sore, who claimed to be a Real Madrid, big Real Madrid fan, although I suspect he might actually be an Atletico Madrid fan, who was furious with them.
Well, he was Atletico youth product, yeah. Of course. They let him go, I think, at 17 because of some injury problems. And he was so annoyed that there's a quote he said, like, Atleti, no quiero ni verlo. Like, I don't want to know anything about Atletico Madrid. He hated them. Still could have gone to Barca, could have gone to Valencia, ended up going to Real Madrid, and like you say, became an icon.
And I think that sense of being rejected by Atletico Madrid is partly what drove it. Obviously, as well, you've got to look at the era that he's part of. So as you say, this is not, in Real Madrid terms, maybe not a hugely successful era, but actually it is in terms of winning league titles. It's the Madrid that came to be known as the Madrid of the Garcias, which, because they had García Noblejas, García Navaja, García Cortés.
They had a lot of Garcias.
Yeah, and essentially it's like calling them the Manchester United Smiths. And in a way, there's this joy in this, because these are local Spanish guys, and it's a very kind of earthy team, if you like. But at the same time, there's a little bit of not that good, a bit grey. And Del Bosco always talks about this as being a team that he felt was treated with aprecio and desprecio at the same time. This idea that, you know, that people were affectionate towards us because we were one of them, but at the same time, just a bunch of local boys. And then it kind of segues into the Quinta. And the Quinta defines a generation the way that this doesn't. But he plays with them briefly, because, of course, he eventually gets overtaken by Emilio Butragueño, who takes his number 7 shirt. And so I think there is a sense that this is, if you like, it's the first Real Madrid of the democratic era. It's the bridge between the Franco era and the democratic era. There's a sense that he represents something of the old Madrid in with the new Madrid at the same time. And I think there's an element of that. And as I say, that comeback thing is really a really big part of this.
And when you hear some of those guys who were his teammates talk, they've gone on to be massive characters in Spanish football, the likes of Del Bosque, the likes of Camacho. There is so much affection and love there. You see Michel talking about him as well. And these guys, when they're telling these stories and these anecdotes, you know, they'll be laughing, and it really transmits just how much he meant to them as a teammate, even if he was a bit of a handful at times.
There's a lovely line from Jorge Valdano, when Jorge Valdano is talking about him, and he says, you have this, right? This is a quote. Juan was the lead role in the Bernabeu, which was like kind of an opera, but an opera for the working classes. So he was this kind of character in the middle of it all. And the other thing he said is, he talks about how Juanito loses his head, we'll come up to some of those, the specific examples in a minute. He said, but it happened so many times, but Valdano's quote is, but if you put them all together, there's probably only half a minute of anger in his entire life. Because what happened is he'd lose his head, he'd do something absolutely crazy, and within a second, he'd be like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. And then he would regret this for months and months and years afterwards.
In fact, there's some great footage of him apologising for one of his most famous indiscretions, yeah. Which we'll come on to again. And he actually says, in my career, there have been two me's.
Yes.
You know, he acknowledges this sort of Jekyll and Hyde type thing, except it's not quite Jekyll and Hyde, because that same kind of competitive spirit is what made him both good and so frequently cross the line as yeah. well. You can't, you know, it's one of those where, like people would say about someone like Diego Costa, you can't take that out of him because he then wouldn't be the player that he was.
Yeah. We've mentioned some of these incidents. Yeah. I think it's time we spoke about them in a little bit more.
Is it
more
worth
depth?
Listing them first? Because as a list, it's really quite impressive.
I mean, there are so many. I mean, maybe we'll take them in chronological order.
Oh, go on then. Yeah, let's do it quite chronological.
In his career, 1978, he received a 2-year ban from UEFA, who in those days, you know, the punishments were pretty severe. And this related to an incident in Zurich in the European Cup. It was the second round. They were playing against Grasshoppers in Zurich. Madrid had won the first leg 3-1. They lost the second leg 2-0. With a controversial late goal. And basically, Juanito, he basically almost headbutted the linesman. Mm. And he then, when the final whistle went, he chased the referee down the tunnel and sort of, well, the referee said that he pushed him or jostled him or something. Juanito denied this and he said, I didn't touch him. I just called him a son of a whore. And he said, that's normal. In Spain, we do it to all the referees. I don't think that defence helped him out.
No, I'm not sure it did. And I think Santillana's recollection of this was, I felt a fist go over my shoulder and connect with the referee. So not sure if it was just calling him names.
So, yeah, for that, he got a 2-year ban. I think it was reduced to 14 months on appeal.
Well, that's all right.
So, I mean, for many players, that would be the most severe punishment they ever received in their career. Not the case. When it came to Juanito later on, and in fact, you know, this sort of bookends his Real Madrid career, because much later on, the incident which kind of, well, either coincided with the end of his Real Madrid career or it was
a
contributor to yeah. his to the end of his career. He stamped on the head of Lothar Matthäus when
and
Real Madrid
go
were playing
and
against
see it,
Bayern.
By the way, because it really is a stamp. It's not, you know, he's standing there and he accidentally treads yeah. on him. He runs over.
So the foul, Matthäus had fouled Chendo. Chendo pushed him over. So Matthäus is on the floor, and Juanito runs over. First, like, stamps on his back.
Yes, because he does it twice.
And then stamps, has another go, and stamps on his head.
I mean, it is genuinely, you watch it, it is really hard to watch. Like, it's chilling.
And it was that afterwards that he apologised for and said, look, I don't know what I was doing. But yeah, for that, he was banned for 5 years. By UEFA from European competition. Like, as I say, that was part of the reason that he ended up leaving Real Madrid.
Some more? Do you want another one? Do you want yeah, Stilica?
Yes, I mean, that is extraordinary, especially given the fact that this is a guy who was, they were teammates for many years.
But they hated each other.
When was that? Because you get the impression their characters were so kind of diametrically opposed.
I mean, I'm reluctant to go down the racial stereotype route here,
but
it is tempting to see it in racial stereotype terms, and I know that certainly some of Juanito's teammates saw it in racial stereotype terms. You've got this hot-headed Mediterranean type against this very cool, calculated German, and they just did not like each other. So when they play against each other, and actually, in fairness, there is a really appalling challenge that starts it all.
Right.
And Juanito and Stilica face up to each other and Juanito spits at him.
That's almost worse than stamping on Lothar Matthäus.
Now, this is a long debate. I think spitting is not worse, but I understand the kind of the disgust factor makes people really recoil.
I think in football,
obviously you're not going to do anything as much damage with that as stamping on someone's head.
And this was photographed, and the photo of Stilica with spit on his face, I think, was on, you know, it was in the papers the next day, and Stilica came out and said, you know, what am I supposed to say to my son about, yeah. you know, this guy who's just gone and spat in your face? Although apparently Stilica tells a story where, I think a month after this or something, he was on the beach down Malaga way, bumped into Juanito, and they made their peace.
Yeah.
So there was sort of a...
When he says bumped into
him,
I like to imagine they literally bumped into each other, had a bit of a fight, and then had their peace over a beer.
Wow, so this guy, I mean, he does sound quite nuts, Juanito.
Yeah, there's also another one, which yeah. isn't quite on the same level, but along a similar vein, playing for Spain
yeah.
In the former Yugoslavia. I think this was in the late 70s.
Yeah, in Belgrade.
It was a tempestuous match.
Have you seen the footage, by the way? There's a footage of the kickoff The ball gets played from one Spanish player to another Spanish player, and that Spanish player almost gets broken in half by a slide tackle.
Some
from
of
the
tackles
Yugoslav.
Are
clearly,
unreal.
Clearly the plan is kill the first guy, and he just about rides it. Clearly the game was horrific.
There was a lot of bad blood in this game. Anyway, Juanito is coming off the pitch. I think he's been substituted.
Yes, he is, yeah.
And he gestures to the crowd, basically trying to wind up the crowd.
He does a thumbs down. I mean, it's so childish. Yeah. He walks off the pitch doing a thumbs down.
And the crowd responds by chucking a bottle at his head. And he gets hit in the head with a bottle. And he goes down. Luckily, he's okay. But at the time, when it actually happens, when he's being treated, you're like, this looks really, really serious.
This guy could be killed. And then there's all sorts of other stories about he had terrible financial problems. He opened a sports shop, which was failed horribly. He had a very, very, very messy divorce, ended up completely skint at one point. He got taken on by the Barcelona president, who thought that his divorce was hilariously funny and decided to try and make capital of this, and that ended up in court between him and the Barcelona president at the time, Núñez. There was a famous quote, I can't remember if it was Núñez now or Gaspar, his number two at Barcelona, who described Juanito as that man who leaves pregnant women on every corner. Clearly there was a lot going on, and teammates say that during that period you could genuinely, he'd walk into the dressing room in the morning and think, okay, avoid him today. And his mood was up and down.
He did seem to get fined a lot as well, which may have contributed to those financial problems. There was a famous night out in Milan where he ended up in a hotel room with a couple of ladies. He was fined by the club for that. There's the thing about bullfighting. Because he was so Spanish, he loved his bullfighting.
Right.
Unsurprisingly, football players aren't allowed to take part in bullfighting because you know there are some health risks attached. For everybody. I mean,
for the
player. But apparently, at one point, he was annoyed with the club because he wasn't getting picked enough or something like that.
So he decides to basically watch this on the team bus to provoke them. So, come on,
then,
look.
He puts on a video of him bullfighting on the team bus in front of the club directors.
Wow.
And naturally gets a massive fine.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So, I mean, I don't know if there's anything more we can say about this sort of whole slightly bizarre, crazy scenario.
You can tell why he was a cult hero then.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he was a madman.
Yes, he was completely and utterly nuts. He went, by the way, down to Malaga and brought them up.
Yes.
Second division and brought them up, and just extraordinary performances there. And then, as I say, when he did die in that car crash, there was, you know, even that reinforced this idea that he symbolised Madrid, because he was in Madrid to watch them play.
Can we talk about one of the best moments for me, which again ties in with the comeback thing, and it's the famous game against Borussia Mönchengladbach.
Right.
One of Real Madrid's great all-time comebacks. They'd lost the first leg 5-1. From home.
Yes.
It comes back to the Bernabeu and they do it.
Yeah.
They score the fourth goal late on, but they've gone 4-0 up. They are going to complete this incredible comeback. And basically in the 90th minute, Juanito gets subbed off. And his reaction to being subbed off is unlike anything I think I've ever seen. I've never seen a player leave the pitch in this fashion. He is quite literally, and normally when people say this, it's an exaggeration, but no, literally jumping for joy.
Yes, yes. He's running off the pitch, kind of skipping, jumping in the air, punching the air.
It's amazing.
A bit like David Pleat.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Very much like David Pleat. Didn't it always work, though? Because the other famous celebration of Juanito, which went horribly wrong, in 1983, Juanito actually scored in the Cup Winners' Cup final against Aberdeen, which Real Madrid lost. That was the year that Real Madrid lost everything. On the final day of the season, as we've talked about this, I think, in Regions and Rivalries.
Yes.
Classic Teams, we talked about it.
Yeah, that's right.
On the
Super
final,
Seasons, maybe, or something.
Final day. He says, if we win the league, I will do a lap of honour on my knees. So he does a lap of honour on his knees. He's going down the tunnel. There's a great photograph on him on his knees, going down the tunnel on the knees, thinking that Real Madrid have just won the league. And there's a last minute winner from Real Sociedad, and Madrid haven't won the league at all.
Ah, oh, Juanito.
So if you're going to construct an elaborate celebration, like, at least get it right.
Yeah.
So there we go. Juan Gomez, Juanito, cult hero of Real Madrid, and he is a Real Madrid legend, but now I think you've got a
Yeah, so
clear
next time
you're
at the Bernabeu and you hear them chanting his name in the seventh minute, now you know the reason they're doing it.
You certainly do. Let's move on because we've got to talk about Willy. Wilfred Agbonavare. I always have trouble with that.
It's best just to say Willy, isn't it?
I'm going
to
say Willy.
That's what
from
the Rio fans thought, wasn't it, when they were choosing a nickname.
So he played for Rio for 6 years, between 1990 and 1996. They were in the Segunda División when he joined. He took them up to the Primera División. I mean, he had some good times with Rio. Remember, this is Rio Vallecano, who people... I think you know the essence of Rio, but if you don't, they are a club in working-class barrio of Madrid, and it's very much a stadium within the neighbourhood. It is part of the neighbourhood. It sort of defines the neighbourhood and defined by the neighbourhood as well.
And a neighbourhood that sees itself as distinct from the rest of Madrid. It almost sees itself as it's the independent republic of Vallecas, isn't it? It's not just a part of Madrid. It's the independent republic.
So much as maybe certain players, as we mentioned in the other podcast, Mágico González was very much built for Cadiz and their sort of laid-back, jovial way of life, and Gaisca Toquero was very Basque and that's why he was embraced, and Juanito was very Spanish and that's why he was embraced by Real Madrid. Well, because you have this Nigerian goalkeeper who comes to this very sort of open-minded, liberal, left-leaning part of Madrid, he was embraced as well. I'm not saying he was embraced because he was black or because he was Nigerian.
No, but it helped the symbolism of this is what we believe in. We believe in welcoming people like you. We believe in bringing you in and making you part of what we are, because actually through you we express what we are.
Yes.
And I think there's definitely an element of that. And also a pretty good goalkeeper. So the penalty save is amazing. There's a video of a penalty save against Real Madrid from 93, I think it is.
Yes, these were probably his two best moments in his Rio career came against Real Madrid, and both came in the same season. It was 92-93. And Rio at that time were coached by Camacho, who we've mentioned in this pod already, and Madrid by Benito Floro. In December, Rio beat Madrid 2-0 in Vallecas, and Willy made a series of saves. He said it was the best day of his career. And then in May, they drew 1-1 at the Bernabeu. Willy saves Michel's penalty, and Madrid, of course, went on to lose the league to Barcelona by a point. And it is such a good penalty save.
There's not much wrong with the penalty, is there?
No, it's a really good... It's a low, well-struck penalty, and he still saves it. But in terms of his quality, like you say, this is Rio in the 90s, and this was a Nigerian international goalkeeper. You know, he went to the 94 World Cup in a Nigeria squad with people like Akocha and Finidi George. And
that was a great Nigerian team. Admittedly, he didn't play.
I mean, he wasn't the first-choice goalkeeper, but he was capped by Nigeria, which for Rio at that point made him a good player.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, we're in the context of these two purely as players, they're there on totally different planets in terms of what they symbolise they are as well. I mean, this is a guy that retires at 31 basically because no one wants him anymore. You know, he'd been at Ethica, and you know, he's not a superstar, but it is about symbolism. And to take it back to Real Madrid, some of the footage, I mean, I was going to say go and have a look at it, but I actually think it's so grotesque, they almost don't want you to go and look at it. But there's some footage of him playing against Real Madrid, and I think it might be that 93 season, but I've got a feeling it's actually the season before, from 92. And the racist abuse he gets is absolutely mind-blowing. Even when, and we sort of talked a little bit about this before we started recording, even when you say, okay, it's the early 90s, it's in that kind of environment, but even then it's still totally mind-blowing. And some of the chanting is grotesque, but one of the things that's really, really particularly horrible about it is that some of the desperately racist things that are said about him on TV cameras with a man with a microphone effectively doing the post-match vox pop, and it is so ridden with hatred, and it's so kind of, I mean, it's not just, you know, a remark that can be construed as racist, it is outright, I mean, a loss
it's the worst kind of racism.
It's literally we should kill this guy because he's black. It's that level of racism. And it's just so horrible. And obviously what this does, as I say, it comes back to this idea of why is it that he becomes a Rio kind of symbol? In part because they see him as a symbol of their own ongoing fight. That at a time when people think it's okay to talk this way, at a time when racism, we're the club that stands against it, or at least we're the group of fans that stand against it. So through him, we have someone to protect, but also someone to project this idea. And so he becomes, if you like, a statement of intent for them as well.
And of course, that's what it says. Those are the words on that mural of his face, which you'll see if you go to the stadium in Vallecas. It's not just about what he meant for Rio. It says it's about thank you for your fight against racism.
Yeah, although curiously enough, There's an interview with him after that Real Madrid game in which he basically says, well, you know, I'm dark-skinned and I'm an opponent and I play in football and it's to be expected.
Yeah.
And there isn't really a fight as such. He's the target of it and the victim of it, but it's not a fight. Although there is a certain... And this is difficult because obviously, you know, I've never been in this situation. There's a certain dignity in his acceptance of it, even if that's an uncomfortable dignity. What? Or maybe it's enforced.
It's almost
acceptance.
Like the environment at that time was such.
Did
that
not allow
I think
for
he
response.
Felt like yeah. he had to. Like his, you know, when that microphone was thrust under his nose and he was asked about it, I get the impression he felt like he had to shrug it off and say, oh, yeah. You know, don't worry, it's part of the game.
It's uncomfortable, isn't it? Because you want him to say... You want him to call this out. You want him to fight for this. You want him to... But, of course, as I say, through him or perhaps through the fact that he can't, he then becomes the vehicle or symbol through which Rivai kind of fans do.
Yeah, and in his own way, you know, just by getting on with it and playing and doing well and trying to ignore it, that was maybe his way of fighting it. Because at that time, 1992... people weren't calling this kind of stuff.
No, exactly. And also there's a personality element to this. And so this is another area where he's totally, totally different to Juanito.
Yes.
So if you've got this environment which, you know, teammates of Juanito say that he would play cards and he would throw the table across the room and if he lost, he would completely lose his head. Cotta, who's actually got the restaurant underneath the stand at Rio, you know, one of the club's great legends, said, you never, ever, ever saw him angry with anyone. He was completely placid. He was totally laid back. Part of his problem at times was that he was too trusting. He lost a lot of money because he would trust anyone who came near him, who chatted to him. And actually, that's similar to Juanito. Juanito was a bit trusting as well. And so there's a real warmth for him from teammates. Not, I would actually say, I think reading between the lines, maybe not really close friendship, but a warmth for this guy that they felt, you know, he was never problematic for anyone. He was... gentle and he was kind and he was nice to everybody.
I was watching the press conference with Paco Gemes and it was just after Willy had died, and Paco Gemes was in charge of Rio, of course, and had been a teammate of Willy and was asked about this, and he spoke quite movingly, just saying, you know, no one deserves to die young, of course, but he was saying Willy really didn't deserve this. He was the nicest person. And we have to say, of course, you know, his story has a pretty sad ending, because having been a player at that time, he wasn't earning much money. He didn't become a rich man. Apparently, the money that he had, he ended up spending on... I think his wife also suffered from cancer and he lost it paying for her treatment. And he ended up doing a series of menial jobs. He was a baggage handler at Madrid's Barajas Airport.
Yeah, he was working for MRW, which is like a... What would you call it? It's a courier company. And so he was the guy kind of handling the packages that were coming into Madrid Airport and sorting them out. There's an amazing video. Well, I suppose it's amazing with hindsight, but there's a video of him doing that job with a reporter, I think, from La Sexta TV, and just explaining to them, this is what your job is, this is why it's important. He's preparing all the packages for the delivery, working through the night at the airport. And this is a guy who's played for Rayo Vallecano. And as he says then, well, you know, those were different days. These days you have 2 good years and you're rich and you're set up for life. But as you say, what little money he'd lost... because of his wife having cancer and spending on it. And then the other tragic element of this is that obviously he knew he was dying, but he didn't necessarily tell a lot of people, so they didn't actually have the time to prepare for it. He hadn't seen his children for 10 years. And Rio, when they knew that the end was coming, tried to arrange for his children to come and see him before he died. And there'd been problems with the visa, and they arrived the day after he passed away. So he was never able to see his children at the end. And I think even that sort of sense of him being an anti-hero, that sense of him being... a normal man, a sufferer, someone who didn't have money, someone who wasn't flash in any way, someone who wasn't a typical footballer, and then ultimately someone who, you know, who, I should say, paid the ultimate price is the worst, not the right phrase, but, you know, someone who passed away young. I think in a way that makes it even more part of this kind of construction of an identity that Rio have.
Absolutely. I mean, that video that you mentioned with him, with the La Sexta reporter, it's very sad.
Yeah.
It's very sad.
And yet he is relentlessly chirpy all the way through it. Although he does say life is hard a few times.
I don't know about relentlessly chirpy. I mean, there's definitely a sadness about him.
But there's a gentle acceptance, don't you think, about him? There's a kindness about him.
I guess so. Yeah, there's a kindness, definitely. But he's saying,
yeah,
you know,
dignity as well.
What
yeah,
I mean is he's not moaning. He's not moaning about it at all.
No, but no. He's not moaning, but it's sad to see somebody in that situation. My wife's died. My kids are studying in Nigeria. He said, you're completely alone. Yes, I'm completely alone here. And that's sad to see. But you're right. He didn't. He wasn't wallowing in it. He was just accepting it. And he said, life is hard. You've got to work. You know, you've got to work hard. And he was taking that job very seriously. He was explaining to the reporter.
I mean, that's the amazing bit about it, is
absolutely.
It? He's explaining to the reporter why it matters that you do it this way, why you've got to put the package in the right place, why it can't, because then it costs the company a lot of money and you've got to do this right.
I think subsequent, obviously, to his death, he has perhaps assumed a role within Ryo supporters and the cult.
It's become folkloric, hasn't it?
It has become folkloric, obviously. Yeah. We mentioned that mural, which is by Gate 1, which is where the Bucaneros behind the goals sit at the Estadio Vallecas. That gate is actually named after him now. So it's Gate 1, but it's also the Eternal Willy gate. So go and check it out because it is in Madrid and it's well worth seeing. And he does remain a cult hero for Rayo Vallecano fans. I think that's it, guys. I think we've touched upon quite a lot in this episode of Cult Heroes. Not necessarily, obviously, the most upbeat of episodes because both members died, but, you know, it was definitely worth doing. And I think they're two very important characters in Spanish football and certainly very important to their respective fan bases. We'll be back in a couple of weeks with another episode of TSFP Presents Cult Heroes. So make sure you join us then. Adiós.
Cheerio.
Bye.
Me pongo la blanca del 7 y no muere el genio. Impulsos de un corazón tan grande y tan pequeño. Una botella volando y un pisotón. Un paseíto nocturno. Europa no le entendió. Era un torero en el fútbol. Se hace la ola de Chamartín hasta Fuengirola. De regate y filigrana se la pone a Santillana. Y ya, Juanito.